Reverend James Grant, affiliate minister at First UU Church in San Diego, will provide a sermon that draws on his experience as a consulting minister and as an interim minister in various UU congregations. He will emphasize the reality that there are no easy answers. In the consulting world, the job of the consultant is to complexify the situation. It is a paradox, and simple answers are almost always the worst answers. His sermon today will be a prelude to the Good Relations seminar that he will conduct after the service today. This workshop is designed as a process by which participants can develop their own strategies to answer complex questions about interactions among congregants and people in general. Out of this workshop, our congregation will develop the framework of a covenant. We are pleased to have the Reverend James Grant here this morning. Reverend Grant.
Thank you, Bill, and I am pleased to be here this morning. Now, you've already heard me once in the responsive reading, and by the time this sentence is over, you will know that I have a slight accent. I acquired that accent honestly. I grew up in the Southern Appalachians in Asheville, North Carolina. What you may not know is that I also grew up in a Baptist congregation, the First Baptist Church of Asheville, North Carolina. And I have been around long enough to know that the word Baptist conjures up all kinds of negative energy among many Unitarian Universalists. But as the former president of the UUA, John Buren's, once wrote, there are Baptists and then there are Baptists. If you visit the website of my home church, First Baptist Church of Asheville, North Carolina, you will find these are the first sentences. Sometimes our middle name, First Baptist Church of Asheville, our middle name confuses people because many people expect a Baptist church to be harsh and condemning, to use high pressure and hard sell tactics. We're not that kind of church. To us, being Baptist means freedom. That hopefully will be enough to assure any liberal fundamentalist that open-minded Baptist is not an oxymoron. Before being credentialed as a Unitarian Universalist minister, I was minister and associate district executive for American Baptist churches, most of the time in the Northeast. But for 15 years, I have been a credentialed Unitarian Universalist minister. And my primary work with Unitarian Universalists has been as a consulting and interim minister. My consulting ministry has taken me to several congregations to create what is known, or to help them create what is known as a covenant of good relations. Conflict is a way of life in all human organizations. A covenant of good relations is one way, and I think a very significant way, to help congregations know how to deal with conflict. I'm going to talk more about that in just a minute, but a lot more this afternoon. My experience has included working with congregations which were in conflict. And I will use some illustrations from one of those congregations this morning, the Unitarian Society of Santa Barbara, where I served for 2 years. Other than the illustrations from Santa Barbara, I will not talk about conflict specifically. I'd rather talk about conflict in general. I will specifically not be talking about the conflict or the disagreement which has disrupted your life here at Fullerton. When I went to Santa Barbara in 1999, the congregation had been torn apart by at least two sides. The minister had accepted a negotiated resignation. The minister's resignation pleased some people and angered some other people. The only conversations frequently were conversations of hostility. The leaders and I worked there together to help that congregation move from conflict to good relations. So this sermon is based on my experience at Santa Barbara as well as working with other congregations in good relations. There were several steps toward building a covenant of good relations at Santa Barbara. And the first step is to embrace complexity. Now, I wish that I could claim that sentence as my own. I copied it from the cover of the latest issue of Harvard Business Review. Last weekend, Betty and I were in Portland, Oregon, visiting our granddaughter and her fiancé. I followed Betty into the newsstand at the airport, and straight in front of me on the magazine rack were these large letters, "Embrace Complexity," on the cover of Harvard's Business Review. Several years ago, I read a statement by a man who taught organizational development. Bill referred to it a moment ago. He wrote, "The first job of a process consultant is to complexify the issues rather than simplify them." I am a complexifier. I do not believe there are any simple or easy answers to the difficult situations of conflict. Why not? Well, the first is that perceptions are different because different people have differing perspectives. Art is not the only thing in the eye of the beholder. Sermons, including this one, are in the ear of the hearer. When I first went to Santa Barbara, the board asked, "What do we need to do to help bring people back together?" I suggested we needed opportunities for people to talk with one another in small groups. And so we arranged for 33 desserts in homes the first month we were there. Betty said 33 extra pounds. We met in homes, small groups. People could become acquainted with Betty and me, as well as begin the process of hearing and speaking with one another. At one of those meetings, a man spoke up, talking about the sermons of the former minister. He said something like this, "I never got anything out of her sermons. It was a kind of mishmash of words. I happened to be sitting where I could observe the face of another man in the group. His face showed shock, surprise. He said, 'Well, I always found her sermons very good and always left feeling enriched by her sermons.'" One of the first steps in complexification, one of the first steps at Santa Barbara, was helping people to understand there are varieties of opinions, there's varieties of truth. Nobody has the truth, the whole truth, and nothing but the truth. That is why I mentioned at the beginning that I was a former Baptist. Also, just to see what your faces would look like. The old axiom, "truth is the first casualty of war," is not only applicable to international conflicts, it's also applicable to conflicts in any organization, including congregations. I love a line from Oscar Wilde, "Truth is seldom plain and never simple." Now, if that line from "The Importance of Being Earnest" is not your cup of tea, maybe something from Einstein might be. Einstein was asked once by a friend, "If truth could be expressed, all truth, everything, in objective or scientific terms," Einstein responded, "Yes, it might be possible, but it would make no sense. It would be description without meaning, as if you described a Beethoven symphony as a variation of wave response." Now, just to make sure that you've gotten the difference between the way truths are heard, here's a line from Shakespeare. When Romeo says, "But hark, what light through yonder window shines? It is Juliet. In the east, she is the sun." Now, you know that that's romantic truth. It has nothing to do with solar power or astronomy. The point just now is there are always varieties of truths. which cause problems. And the major problem comes when somebody believes they have the exclusive truth. If they have the truth and the only truth exclusively, then that means I'm right and you must be wrong. And that kind of mentality will result in the inability to manage differences. In my experience, that is what often happens. But you don't have to take my word for it. On our trip to Portland, we flew Southwest, and their little in-flight magazine called Spirit had a one-page article about moving from conflict to winning solutions. The first step, according to that article, to move from exclusive truth was collaboration. More about collaboration in a moment. So the lesson we learned at Santa Barbara, which has been verified for me in a variety of congregations and organizations, is that moving from conflict to good relations begins with complexifying the situation, beginning to acknowledge the different perceptions and the different truths. Now, there's one other step in complexification. It is that language is probably the worst possible way to communicate, and it's the only way we have. Words simply mean different things to different people. Here's an example. When does 1 plus 1 equal 6? Now, that is not a problem in modern math. It is a problem in two human beings trying to relate. Betty and I celebrated our 54th wedding anniversary on Wednesday past, just 4 days ago. Whenever the two of us are discussing something, particularly something about which we don't agree, even after 54 years, there are always six people present. There's Jim as he thinks he is. There's Jim as Betty thinks he is. And there's Jim as he really is. And the same is true for Betty. Betty as she thinks she is. Betty as Jim thinks she is. And Betty as she really is. Two people? Six opinions? Just imagine what happens to communication. Problems with communication are not only true about human relationships. I once observed an automobile accident. I was right there when it happened. I was at first puzzled, and then I was intrigued by how many different stories people were telling the police. Now, they had different perspectives, to be sure. But the problem seems to be interpreting the questions being asked by the police. For example, when the policeman asked what color was the car, some people mentioned one of the cars that was in the accident. Some other people mentioned the other car that was in the accident. And yet some other people mentioned the car that had caused the accident, which by now was on down the road. I can assure you that in every conflict situation, in every congregation which I've known, there are varieties of perceptions, varieties of truth, and problems in communication. They're simply part of the complexity of human organization. And that's why Harvard Business Review challenged its readers to embrace complexity. Now, if complexity is a reality, and I think it is, collaboration is the first step toward finding a solution. Every individual in an organization has to be committed to collaboration rather than confrontation. The first step in collaboration is mutual respect. Respect means not only honoring the different perspectives, not only honoring the different truths, but honoring the individuals whose perceptions and truth may be different from my own. The covenant of good relations, which we worked out at Santa Barbara, and those of you who stay for the workshop will find a copy of that covenant. Here's how they said it in one sentence. In my interactions with others in the congregation, I will be receptive, respectful, listening with care and compassion. One dictionary defines respect as consideration and esteem. When we are considerate with one another, we give attention to one another. We're more concerned with listening than with speaking. There was an essay on the UUA website several years ago by a man named Ralph Cantor. He wrote, "Respect is mutual care and regard, dignity, physical and emotional safety. It is a state where everyone counts and everyone counts upon everyone else." In one of our small group discussions at Santa Barbara, I was present when two women, an older woman and a younger woman, were holding hands and crying with one another. They had been on opposite sides in the conflict, but the opposing sides was not what is important. What was important was the human beings and their care for one another. There's no African-American spiritual. It's apropos. We're in the same boat, sister. I said the same boat, brother. And if you rock it one end, you're going to rock the other. We're in the same boat, brother. Every organization and all the people in it are with one another, holding one another in high esteem. And if they respect one another, then when the high waves of conflict come, when there is disagreement, people will not be nauseous and the boat will not capsize. Here's how it is stated in the Covenant of Good Relations at Santa Barbara. We will expect that there will be differences among us and accept and care for one another despite our differences. We will remain engaged with gentleness and respect when times are uncertain. I can almost hear it. Well, yes, Reverend, those are very nice words, but... Or, well, that just seems to me to be a lot of pious platitudes. Let's be realistic. It's also realistic to engage in loving forgiveness. I'm not talking about sentimental slush. I'm talking about the ability to be with one another in good times and bad, in good times and bad, which are not easy, with apologies and forgiveness. The Unitarian Universalist Skinner House Press has a little book which is entitled, What If Nobody Forgave? Briefly, it's a story about people in a small town who walked around with huge burdens on their back. Great burdens so that they were bent down, could not stretch out. One day, a wise man happened to come through the village. He inquired about the bundles everyone was carrying. What's this all about? He heard the explanation that those bundles were their grudges. And more than that, those grudges went back several generations. It's kind of like the mythical feud of the Hatfields and McCoys, you know. Well, the wise man said, well, can't you get rid of these bundles of grudges? They said, well, we used to know how, but we've forgotten how to do it. He said, well, I know five words that will do the trick. So the mayor of the town was very excited. He called everybody to gather in the village square, introduced the wise man, and asked him to tell what would happen and how he could help the people get rid of those bundles of grudges. Here's what the wise man said. My friends, there are five simple words. Some people have trouble saying them, but I think you have the courage to speak them to one another. The trick is to say them to one another and mean them. The first two words are, I'm sorry. Can you say those two words? I'm sorry. The next three words are, I forgive you. Can you say those words? I forgive you. Well, with some grumbling, some uncertainty, the townspeople began kind of whispering, finally kind of saying softly, I'm sorry, I forgive you, I'm sorry, I forgive you, to one another. And the bundles of grudges began to fall away. Oh, well, yeah, Reverend, that's really simple. Too much Pollyanna for me. I dare to suggest there's another kind of Pollyanna. It is the simplicity of negativity with all the symptoms. The symptoms of vengeance, the symptoms of vindictiveness, the symptoms of retribution. Those are simplistic answers to complex issues. The simplicity is that people can get stuck in emotional responses with a result that thinking is confused with emotion. Emotionally loaded responses are almost always based on simple, too easy answers. This week I received this publication in the mail. It's called Quest. It is the publication of the Unitarian Universalist Church of the Larger Fellowship. Some of you may see it occasionally. The Church of the Larger Fellowship is a church dedicated to people who might live where there is not a Unitarian Universalist congregation available. This whole issue is about forgiveness. But there are no simple, easy answers here. Forgiveness is hard work because, as one of the authors says, forgiveness begins with forgiving ourselves, and that is not easy. There's a really great, excellent essay by Reverend Meg Riley, who is the lead minister of the Church of the Larger Fellowship. Meg shares a personal incident of conflict and of how hard it is to forgive. I've done covenant or good relations workshops in several congregations, some of which were experiencing conflict. The key to the workshop to move toward good relations is intention. Will. What do you will for one another in both good times and bad? What do you intend for your family? What do you intend in your work situation? What do you intend when you're trying to merge into the traffic? What do you intend in the Unitarian Universalist Church in Fullerton? Now, I think this sermon needs to come with a warning label. You can try it at home, but a warning label. Here it is. If all the readers of Harvard Business Review determine to embrace complexity, they will be going against the flow of culture. If all the people who read Spirit magazine this month on Southwest Airlines take seriously moving from conflict to winning solutions, they're going to be swimming upstream. If all the people who read Quest and take seriously the articles about forgiveness, we will be like salmon swimming against the current, because the current of our culture, the norms of our culture, are simple answers to complex questions. If you don't believe it, just listen to the politicians talk. The current of our culture is negativity and confrontation rather than collaboration. The river of our culture does not include respect and forgiveness. And that is our role. That is the role of liberal religious congregations. We can provide a witness that there is a better way. Our culture needs the witness of caring, listening, respect for one another. I invite you to join me in the workshop after this service, later in the afternoon, after the coffee time, where we will lay the groundwork for a covenant of good relations for this congregation. A reminder, again, the workshop I will facilitate this afternoon will not be dealing with the disagreements with which you have been dealing here. I will not talk about anything which has happened here recently. Rather, my purpose is to help you prepare for the next problem which may surface. I hope you will join us. Shalom and Salaam.